Accession number 29423, Reel 3.
Well, yes, I left 74 Squadron and went to, I can't remember the number, it might be 154, at the Catterick. Mm-hmm. And I've been there a fortnight. And I don't know what I was doing there, because I was sent to Symphony Armoury.
That's it.
That way. I was sent to Symphony Armoury. And I've been there a fortnight, and they said, you can go on here for a week or so, but we'll get in touch with you. Because we'll be going to the United States, to their Air Force, it'd be a secondary. And which I didn't really like very much. Anyway, it came out, I had to go to Manchester. Mm-hmm. I forget that. It's the equivalent of, I think, Ringway. Mm-hmm. I think it was called Ringway then. Mm-hmm. I would put the train in, and overnight journey to the Clyde. Mm-hmm. And then we'll put onto the Covita. New Zealand shipping liner, which had a load of German prisoners, and with the Preen, who was the great German submariner, he was on it. They were not very nice, or very difficult, but they had the Canadian infantry looking after them. And the trip across the Rangitiki, the New Zealand shipping liner I was on, and we had the Louis Pasteur carrying prisoners as well. And so there were only two large liners, both around 25,000 to 30,000 tons. And we were escorted halfway with English destroyers, and then they had to go to Iceland to refuel, and we were picked up by American destroyers. They took us on to Halifax, Nova Scotia. And from that, went down to, eventually, after a lot of problems over passports and things that we didn't have. I said, oh, you don't need passports, you've got your identity cards. Anyway, they led us into America, and we went down to Washington, to the RAF headquarters there. And there were three of us. And I went to Selma in Alabama, and the other two went to somewhere in Georgia. And so I was at Selma, Alabama for a while, and then I went down with the Arcadets to Eglin Field in Florida to do their air firing training, and I went back from there. I went straight into their test, what they call that proving ground. And I was flying all sorts of different aircraft, but I did test flying on the Lightning, that's the P-38, and the Mustang with the Allison engine, and the Thunderbolt, that big ugly horrible airplane. It weighed 8 tons, and it didn't go very quickly, only straight down. And so I was there right through the summer, And then we made a film on our firing with the 20th Century Fox. And then I went on leave and I took a local offer that went out with us, with me to California, and we stayed at Pasadena with my uncle and aunt. And with lots of introduction to 20th Century Fox Studios, and it was a wonderful time there. You'll read it, bits in the book about it, but we won't go into it now. And we went by train, which was the most interesting and expensive experience. And we should have been flown, somebody would have flown us without any trouble at all. But I wanted to go by train. And I never thought they go so slowly. This was the, there's a name.
What's the Pullman?
Oh, it's in my book, the name of it. And it stops every station from New Orleans to Pasadena. I thought we're never going to get there. And we're going through Death Valley, which is about 400 feet below sea level. And the air conditioning went up. The belt broke up, the air conditioning. And we roasted alive. Anyway, we got through. But to give you an idea of the length of the journey, it took 24 hours to cross Texas alone. And the old squaws sitting there at their wonderful addresses trying to sell things to you. Not that they wanted to buy anything from them. They weren't very nice people. But the journey was, it was most interesting. Particularly when we went over the Rockies, and the last locomotives had to be taken off. But took with two. They were taken off, and three locomotives were put on with tiny wheels to get us over the Rockies. And at one stage, the front engine was passing it around the bend. Anyway, it was interesting. And my uncle and aunt met us at Pasadena. And then we spent all our time. We went to the races with them too. Oh, it's a very famous, it's a world famous race. It's like about the H3. That's in the book as well, the name. We went there and we met an old lady who went to a restaurant there, not Berry Farm. And this old deer had come right across America on a covered wagon. And she was over 100 or whatever. And it had been chased by Indians. That was an awful journey. But she had a very successful business. And they only had steak and berry pies. Of every type of berry pie you can think of, and many that we've never heard of in this country, but they're all very, very good and expensive. But that didn't matter. My relatives took care of the bills. And after I'd been there a year, and the other two had been sent back home, they wanted me to stay and go up to right field at Dayton, Ohio, and to the other testing ground. I said, no, I want to go home. And I got on a ship, the convener in Halifax, Nova Scotia, back to where we started, and an eagle and Herbert Wilcox were on it. And Herbert Wilcox, I had a cabin, a single cabin, on the outside, and poor I've just told you that.
And an eagle.
Was opposite me in a cabin on her own. And Herbert Wilcox said, I'll get that bugger anywhere near her. And so I said, go up. And but he didn't know I wasn't having it. So I said, sentry duty up and down there. And I used to go and see her every morning. And oh, she was ill. She was so seasick. And with a load of civil servants from the Treasury going back from Washington. And they weren't enjoying it. Some days I go in the dining room and I'm the only one there. It didn't bother my appetite. And when we got to Belfast, and then I said, we're going to Liverpool. And the next thing is we're going down the Irish Sea. We're going nowhere near Liverpool. I went to Bristol. And I used Lovelhaven. And the customs were vicious. And I had a big cabin trunk. And it was full of tobacco. Cigars, cigarettes, tins of tobacco from the farm. And I thought, well, if I get to that, I'm going to be in dead lumber. Anyway, they set about pouring an eagle, and they put everything she got in the belt. And she had an enormous belt. I thought, you know, rotten sods. All going on and watch that they do. Anyway, they did. And she'd been over in America with Herbert Wilcox and made a film or two, bringing a fortune of money into Britain. And then they taxed on the bits and pieces she got. So I got away with it very nicely. And I got back, to England, and I was sent to it's near Morpeth, Flanshire, an O.T.O. And a chief flight instructor. And they didn't keep me there long. And I went down to Harden. And I was at Harden on a short bus stop. I was back up to Morpeth again. To the School of Admin. So I had to do an admin course there. And I thought this bodes very badly for me. Anyway, to go home. And I went back to Arden again as a station I'd been up. And that ended. And now, this happened when I came back from Italy. Mm-hmm. I'm just getting things all wrong and wrong. Mm-hmm. When I came back from America, I was posted to Exeter. And they didn't know what to do with it. So they sent me to Bullet Head as station commander. And so I into the fishing job there without a license, without anything. And the fisherman at Bullet Head had sold him, got pretty angry about it. And so we got kicked out, and I was sent to Penrith. To 602 Squadron, and I went there to find an awfully nice CO, a man called Mike Pater, who'd been right to the desert. I had an exhausting time, and we were doing it, these awful trips from Penrith to Brest, escorting bombers to bomb the three battleships there. And it was a terrible time. Anyway, we got over that, and then we were sent from Penrith to Lasham in Hampshire. It's a brand new aerodrome. Oh, it was great. It was a bit of comfort. And we'll put in tents in this now. No bloody comfort, and I hadn't got a mess yet. I can't get that sold it. I sold it to the missionaries, went to Africa, and it had everything, even a bath, a bucket, everything. And I got a fiver for it from a bloke in 54 Squadron, and so. We were sleeping rough, oh dear. There's a picture of me in my pyjamas carrying two cups and mugs of tea and a bucket of water to get washed in. And I've got my pyjamas over my uniform trying to keep warm. It was so cold. And the snow on the ground, oh God, what a time that was. So, they wouldn't give us transport. Eventually, they gave us a motorbike and a sidecar. So we used that to go out poaching. And we were shooting pheasants all over the place, bringing them back. And Henry was a Frenchman in the squadron. I don't know, I can't remember his name. I thought it was Henry. I mean, he was a chef in his civilian life. So he was cooking. And we went on it. Get off that. And this is how we went on. And from there, they said, you're now being transferred to the second tactical air force. I thought, oh, great, I need to get rid of these bloody awful Spitfire 5s. And you could never get away from the bloody things. And so we got to, we set from Lasham to Fairlop, right in the middle of Elford. Houses all around there. And at night time we went to sleep in the air raid shelters because they, in an artillery zone, fired the guns in such a manner that they, where the shells burst, the shrapnel fell onto the aerodrome. So if we'd been in tents there, we could have been severely injured. So we had to sleep in the air raid shelters. Oh, what a place that was. We'd sleep with any bird we could find any house. I found myself a girlfriend, and I said, where's your husband? Oh, don't worry about him, he's in the Mediterranean. And I look at the picture of him. Oh, a nice young man he looked. He was a sailor. And about 2 or 3 in the morning, the bedroom light went on, and there was a sailor. And it was so polite. It was very uniforms over the bed end, and he could see I was a squadron leader. And he said, sir, the hospitality of this house is not extended to you. Do you mind leaving? And I'm never going to say that. And I have to say first, I don't know. Anyway, I did. And we gave her a hard time. He bashed her. And I saw in the pub, she eyes were black and the face was cut. And says it's an off-sea to me when you left. I thought I wouldn't be a bit surprised. I'd have done the same thing. Or would I? I don't know. Anyway, we had a cracking time at Fairlop, apart from the inconvenience of having to go into air raid shelters and things like that to sleep. But the next thing we knew was the signal came through, and I was supposed to do Command Woman Night Squadron at Coldishaw. Of all the bloody awful air travel, it's Coldishaw. It isn't there anywhere. Norwich is the nearest place. With no transport, with a very nasty piece of work as a station commander, hated the sight of us. And they said, if you think you're coming out of the Prince Patrol, you've got another thing coming. Get those cars off this camp. And if you thought we were not going to get petrol, there's another thing coming, because we used to back our cars up to the wire netting. And the petrol tank was coming off, and the fellas still the wire netting. Anyway, I loved that place. I loved everything about it. I don't like Norwich. And I got all dressed up. I had a date in the afternoon. And so I said to Tony Drew, go get my car for the petrol. This was the company car. I said, go fill it with petrol and then you can get it back. And I was standing waiting. And I should have known better. There's a big muddy bottle in front of me. And he came and he went straight to that muddy bottle. And I was covered from head to foot in mud. And he thought he was killing me. It was so funny. And I couldn't remember that. I thought it was funny. But it was my best blue. I couldn't go out like that. So I left him with a 12 bore. He goes up a tree, starts singing girl, and so I said, you get down here, you bastard. He said, I'm not bloody coming down. I said, you shoot me. I was going to shoot you in any case. And I shot him in the bum and his legs. And then we had to come down then, and our squadron doctor was up, had to break dig the bullets out of him, and we made that very painful. But Peter was quite a character. And then the king came to see us, and whilst he was there, I was on readiness, so my section was scrambled, and I had a New Zealand spurs. And I couldn't stand the sight of it. And he couldn't. understand me. And he was frightened to death of me. So he goes, I'd had some cheek from him. And we tied his hands behind his back. And I nailed his feet, his shoes to the ground. So he couldn't move. And left him. And he got his own back. Anyway, we were chasing this ankle. We were doing a weather recce and shipping down the east coast. And it was in and out of clouds. And I never got a good shot at it at all. I did shoot, but I didn't get a good shot. And so when we landed, the king said, did you shoot it down? So I said, no, sir. It was too difficult. It was in and out of cloud. And then we lost it all together. And he said, you've got a beautiful airplane like that, paid for by the country, and you've not used it properly. Well, he used such an old twit. Anyway, he apologized later on. But I was bloody angry. And then my fetter said, your aircraft's unserviceable. So I said, why? Well, he said, if you come in and look out and show you, and there were bullet holes all over my aircraft, from behind, not from the front. And it was, and tried to show me down. And he asked the station commander for an immediate posting, because he'd have gone down without any question. But that's, he went. And the job we had to do there was a bloody awful job. We had to escort American bombers on day raids into northern France. Sometimes it would be our own two group, but mainly American bombers. And they were hopeless. I never saw them. And I did 60 raids with them. And I never saw them hit a target once. But it was good what we did when we went with two groups. Because they were very, very good. Our own Bostons and Mitchells. Are you changing?
Just coming up to the end of the reel. I'll stop this one now.